Tuesday's roundup by this time, we ask What the Hack, where we talk about tech and digital communications. And as always, with Nazreen Ibrahim, CEO of NAS Consulting International. The world's first global AI safety summit, held just half a year ago, was attended by corporate execs, world leaders, academic experts, and industry role players. But the second such summit, set to take place from the 21st to the 22nd of May and hosted by South Korea, seems to be attracting far less attention. Nazreen Ibrahim, thanks so much for joining us. Why was the 2023 summit so heralded and well attended, but it looks like there's not much attention this year on AI safety, particularly from world political and business leaders? Nazreen, good morning.
Good morning, Lester. So nice to talk to you. Forgive me for my fluey voice. It's apparent, very clear, I would say, to see the lack of interest in this year's attendance in Seoul. Industry chatter and industry debate among us observers and communication and technology specialists is simply around the geopolitical nature, the highly volatile nature that we face in the world at the moment. So it comes as no surprise that there is less than excitable attendance at this year's session. Last year's event at Bletchley Park, which we know Bletchley, where they had the Bletchley Declaration, was unique and exciting for many reasons. Bletchley Park, of course, is where code breakers worked against German Nazis in the World War. And it's a place of computing, what is heralded as computing excellence. Alan Turing, of course, who built one of the first computer programs. That I need to actually question myself, building the first computer program. But being the father of AI, as it were, coining the term, worked at the same place. And so Minister Rishi Sunak, bringing together most of the world leaders who spoke about the altruistic benefits of AI at the time, everyone from Sam Altman to European Union Commission head Ursula von der Leyen, Vice President Kamala Harris, the works. He really got in the works. And when you think about the world stage this year, the genocide in Gaza takes center stage. And so when people are thinking also about the effects of AI, the excitement around what AI promises is paired, I think, by their enthusiasm for how much it's working currently in our lives, or the fact that we are using it. What else more can we talk about? It's like when people think about what more can cell phones do in our lives, if we think what kind of device we want. And so the excitement around AI is we want to use it. We want to be get it into our businesses at a more consumer level. At a company level, there seems to be excitement around how quickly large organizations can push it to their consumer base, like Meta did with Meta's AI assistant at a great scale, at a large consumer base. But in terms of regulation, if we have one set of regulation, but we're dealing with an uproar worldwide against a current genocide, then where do we have time to talk about the safety of AI?
But is it also maybe even a case that AI is already so politicized and militarized? Because AI is already being used in current warfare. Is it a case of a genie or a Pandora that is already out of a box, and that's very, very difficult to get that genie back into a lamp if AI is already being used for political and militaristic motives?
And that's a great point that you raise. And this is what we're trying to grapple with in our world of being AI first, being AI driven. If it is not regulation, then it is the race to become a superpower in AI. A few years ago, China was leading the race with establishing a national AI plan, having a national AI conversation. New Zealand in 2019 worked extensively to host a comprehensive national AI conversation. Many African countries, aside from establishing data privacy protection acts, are few of them are in the top five to establish national AI plans. Kenya was the one who announced their plan quite recently. So when you think about the approach and the understanding of where AI can have for sovereign nations, where it can have the most leverage, you are correct in identifying that a military approach is primarily one of them. And it is to a great degree the side where consumers or just general citizens, you're talking about the digital citizenry, have apprehension towards it. And it's true. Every time you speak around current conflict in the world, again, I'm going to refer to the genocide in Gaza. We have seen numerous news outlets, the ones that report to a certain degree accurately on things going around in the world, because we have to understand that we have to speak plainly about whether news organizations are reporting correctly or reporting from a very skewed or biased angle. We have to acknowledge that. But in terms of the AI component and understanding that conversation around AI, the militarized approach to targeting individuals based on religion, race, caste, or whatever component it might be, through targeting groups of people through police surveillance or militarization, which we have seen in the US quite extensively, through the banking system, a form of weaponizing AI is apparent not only through military use, but you can see it escalating through more, how can I say, we can say when you use detergents through a more cleaner look, but still as harmful in different environments.
There is a nuclear non-proliferation treaty on nuclear weapons that most of nation states have signed. It seems that there should also be a discussion on a treaty that binds nations not to use AI in some form of nefarious, harmful, or militaristic way, whether that could be binding, whether you have nations that will sign up to that. But just like a nuclear non-proliferation treaty, it seems that there should be a discussion on whether nation states to commit not to use AI technology that would harm people in a militarized fashion.
We are living in a highly polarized world at this point. When you look at the declaration that they came out of last year's Global AI Summit in the UK in November, the Bletchley Declaration, you know, as they say, described by the UK government as the world first agreement. Excuse me. It was endorsed by 28 countries, including the US, Saudi Arabia, China, and the UK, and the EU. If I look further at what the declaration signified, a collective commitment to proactively manage potential risks associated with the so-called frontier AI, highly capable general purpose AI models, which again, we were just talking about that, things like surveillance, anything that would cause a high sense of bias, they need to be deployed in a safe and responsible way. In particular, the signatories committed through the declaration to identify AI safety risks and to build risk-based policies to ensure safety in light of such risks. Lester, please tell me how effective the establishment or execution of this Bletchley Declaration could be, signifying the very low and poor attendance at this year's summit in Seoul, which I heard is virtual. Did they not say it was a virtual leaders' meeting?
I'm also a supporter and a follower of a national civic society organization called Stop the Killer Robots. It sounds fun, it sounds cinematic, but it in fact has a very important purpose of calling for an international treaty banning autonomous weapons systems which may use AI technology in the course of modern warfare. But Nazreen Ibrahim, really appreciate your time with What the Hack every Tuesday. It's